Hi, and welcome to Macro Monday, where we talk macro, try to make sense of markets that, really don't make any sense. And more importantly, answer your questions so we can become better investors. I'm your host, Steve Van Meter, and thank you for joining me today. Have I got a great episode ahead? Because tomorrow is a big day in the macro world. Tomorrow, we're going to find out if I'm right or wrong. I know, it's coming down to one day. 5:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. No, Pacific Standard Time. I'm like, wait a minute, I'm not going to be up that early. No, 5:30 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, the Consumer Price Index is released. And that is when we find out, is the investment world right that inflation is coming? Or am I right that disinflation or deflation is coming? Pretty exciting, because this is it. If I'm right, well, then the markets are going to start changing their direction. If I'm wrong, then I have to reevaluate my entire thesis. Because if consumer prices rise, which everyone believes is going to happen, well, then I have to accept that potentially I'm wrong, and that my data is wrong, and that somewhere in my data, either we're under a new normal, something shifted, or there's something I missed. And if I'm right and the consumer price index goes way down, well, then I'm in the right place at the right time, and that's really cool. Now, what if it doesn't really do much? I doubt that's going to happen. I doubt it's going to be relatively flat. We'll go through and look at some of that data again. But before we do all that, before we get to how hedge funds are positioned and my thesis, because this is exciting in the macro world. I mean, this is kind of it. You know, you build your whole view. You make your investments based on that view. And then what happens? You wait for the data to confirm. Will I be able to sleep tonight? Yeah, not worried about it. But I will be up by 5:30, at least looking at my phone. There's no doubt in my mind that I will be watching this live, because I'm pretty excited. This is going to prove me right. Now, over the weekend, there was an article that came out that said effectively the Fed's money printing is working and it's going to be very, very inflationary. And it was came out by a large bank, BMO. I'm not even sure who they are, because I don't think there's one anywhere near here. Could be down in LA, I'm not sure. But anyways, they came out and there was a big article printed about this. And so I have that here for you to see. And they were talking about the M1 money supply. Now, if you go and read this, which is really unnecessary, but their title was, "One Bank Explains Why QE No Longer Stimulates the Economy and Only Leads to Higher Prices." Oh, wow. When I saw this Sunday morning, I couldn't wait to disprove it. I couldn't wait to show it to you. So it says here, here's a key sentence, "Money supply that doesn't translate into consumption must result in higher financial asset prices until defaults result in wealth destruction." Okay. Let's go prove that wrong. So here's the M1 money supply that they referenced in their article. And wow, it's just going higher. No question, no surprise. We know this because we look at how the M2 has been rising. So we know this has been going on. So if we break into the M1, which you can scroll down and click on the money stock measures, you get the release tables. Now, we've looked at some of these before because they flow into the M2. But what do we find? Institutional money funds. This is money in your employer-sponsored plans, 401ks, 403bs, 457 plans, that has been shifting into cash or money market. You're also seeing this in brokerage account, IRAs, brokerage accounts, anything that's kind of stock market investment type stuff. That's what an institutional money fund is. So does that really count in terms of what we see in inflation? No, because this money isn't coming out to buy stuff. Now, at some point, it will come back out of cash to either buy stocks, bonds, or who knows what. But for the moment, institutional money fund is deflationary because as money flows into money markets, it has to be backed by T-bills, treasury bills, and that pushes interest rates down. And when interest rates go down, it tightens financial conditions. So that's not probably what this article is looking at. But how about currency? Well, currency didn't really grow much. Travelers checks? Nope. Demand deposits. Now that one, what is demand deposit? Well, that's simply me going to the bank and saying, give me my money. That's a demand deposit. So they have, you know, say 7 days to give it to you, but we're used to that being fairly instantaneous. That's a demand deposit. Now that went up. That's not really a big surprise, but look at this, other checkable deposits, and those are shooting really higher at commercial banks and at thrift institutions. Well, who banks at commercial banks? Well, generally, large corporations. So I said, let's look at a chart of other checkable deposits, and boom, there you go. There is what they're saying. Look, this is going in to make asset prices mysteriously rise. And I thought, wow, that's really interesting, because I didn't realize that money in checking accounts causes asset prices, or specifically stock prices, to mysteriously rise. The question then I asked myself on Sunday morning was, well, why would people or corporations be putting money into their checking accounts? Well, probably because they're borrowing money. And we know this because corporations are borrowing massive amounts of money. We look at this every Friday, and we can see that in red, commercial industrial lending against other checkable deposits at commercial banks. And you can see when deposits are rising, banks don't, or corporations don't tend to borrow that much. But when deposits fall, corporations start to borrow again. And once those checkable deposits are rising, they drop their lending down. And when their deposits roll over and are slowing down, they start borrowing again. And sure enough, that relationship has been really good all the way up until, say, 2012 and on, where corporate share buybacks and low interest rates cause corporations to just borrow massive amounts of money and buy their shares back. And now look, they're both going up together. So does that somehow make stock prices go up? So if Apple borrows money, does that magically mean their stock price is going to just go up next tomorrow? No, that's not how it works. So how do you read all of this? Well, let's look at the M2 money supply. And I'm not trying to cheat by cutting out the M1. I just happen to have a chart of the M2 against the consumer price index. Let's just first test to see if these people are right. And when you look at the two, you don't see a direct relationship. In fact, during recessions, you can see the money supply rises, which everyone says is inflationary, and the consumer price index goes down. In fact, we see M2 rising here and CPI flat, M2 rising here, CPI falls, M2 rising. Oh, this time it's inflationary. This time it's inflationary. And I didn't do this before we started recording, but let's just see what happens if we invert it, if that, just for fun. And yeah, it kind of tells you that there is no direct relationship between the money supply and inflation, but the market believes that. Now, why is that? Do you understand why? Let me share with you why. Because the money supply tells us a number of things, but it can also be very, very easily misread. And that's one of the mistakes I made years ago, is misinterpreting the money supply and how and when and what it means. Let's start with talking about the institutional money flows. So what we know is money is flowing out of stocks and bonds and commodities and going into money markets. And we've looked at a chart where that shows that until that peaks, stocks won't bottom. So as long as people are putting money in money markets and that number goes up, stock prices will eventually go down. Why is that? When do stock prices start going up? When money comes out of the money markets. And where does it go? Back into risk assets or bonds or commodities. That's when it goes up. So how do we interpret that from the money supply? Because let's talk about how consumption works. So let's say I want to take my wife to Disney World, and we'll just pretend for the sake of argument that we're not in the middle of a viral pandemic, just to make the story work that I could actually take her, that she would actually want to go. And I'm in California, and Disney World's obviously in Florida. So by the time I factor airfare, food, hotels, other expenses, it's going to be an expensive trip. Oh, you have park tickets? Yeah, it's going to be an expensive trip. There's no doubt about it. Now, I can finance that consumption, right? Swipe it on a credit card, go get a loan from a bank. So if I borrow money, that's consumption now. Now, let's say we're going to go in 2 years, and I say this was about 10 grand to go. I really don't know. I'm just going to make up a number. And I commit to saving $400 a month for 2 years. So I have the savings. Now that's going to, that $400 a month, while on a very microscopic basis, is going to show up in the money supply, is me saving. Because saving is future consumption. Borrowing is consuming now. It doesn't show up in the money supply if I borrow money. But me saving money means future consumption. So when people see the money supply rising and they go, oh, that's bullish, the money supply is rising, they're thinking, oh, look at all this future consumption. My God, there's going to be so much consumption that that's going to have to drive interest rates way up. Has to. But the problem is people don't think about this very deeply. They just kind of, it's kind of like just splashing a little water off a duck's back. They don't really think about it. Why are Americans saving money right now? Well, because 30 million have filed unemployment claims. And while most of them believe their job is coming back, the reality is 5 million people are probably not, at best. 15 million is what most experts are now predicting will not get their job back. So are these people that had just filed unemployment like, man, this is great. I think I'm going to start saving money so I can spend it. No, they're saving money because they don't know if or when they're going to get their job back. They don't know if their pay is going to be the same. They don't know. So they're saving it. How about corporations? Are we seeing this big resurgence in corporate borrowing because finally corporations got what President Trump asked them to do when he passed a tax cut and build a bunch of factories here? No, they're borrowing money because they're losing money. And now some corporations said, hey, we're just taking these loans because we're not sure, we may not need it and we may pay it back. Other corporations are borrowing money because they do need it. They're losing money every day. And they're borrowing the money to stay alive. Now, does that feed into economic growth? No. If I'm borrowing money to service debt and to stay afloat, that does not lead to economic growth. So what you have is a lot of people misreading the money supply. And that's why when we look at this chart here again, you'll notice, looks like it didn't clean up quite right. Didn't save it. Well, who knows? It says zero minus that. It's not quite the case, but let's try it one more time. Maybe it just needs a little massaging. There it goes. That's why you can have a rising money supply in the middle of a recession that causes a collapse in consumer prices. But the market gets it wrong. You know, how can all these smart people get this wrong if they don't look at the underlying data? They really don't. They just look at that broad money supply chart right here and say, oh, well, look, this has to be inflation. It has to be. What else can it be? Well, maybe it's people worried about the future and saving money. So where do we go from here now? Now let's talk about my thesis and being right or wrong, because this is a big deal. I mean, this is kind of, you know, like graduating high school. I mean, this is exciting day tomorrow for me. And let's close off some of these tabs so we can look at some of the other ones. And we need to talk about real yield. So for those of you who are new to the channel, thanks for joining us. And we need to look at the Fisher equation, because this is, everything's playing into this tomorrow. So the real interest rate equals the nominal interest rate less the inflation rate. And I want to focus just on the long bond, 30-year yields, because it's risen lately. In fact, let's quickly take a side look at what's going on with 30-year yields. And they actually closed almost at the same level as they did the other day. So this big move here, because my charting system on yields, it closes out 30 minutes before the market closes for reasons beyond me. It did come back down. So what we've seen this month is yields rising. Now, why is that? Because the markets, you're going to see, the market's letting those yields go up. And there's a big reason why. It's the Fisher equation. So let's look at where we are right now. So roughly the 30-year treasury yield is 1.4%, slightly higher, but 1.4. The year-over-year rate of the consumer price index is 1.5%. So 1.4 minus 1.5 means you're losing money, 0.1%. per year if you're holding a 30-year bond, which is why people are selling bonds and driving interest rates up, because they think this number is going up. Let's say it prints 2.4 tomorrow. That means there's a net loss of 1% a year. That means owning bonds is bad because inflation is rising faster than the interest rates. But what if it goes the other direction tomorrow? What if the year-over-year rate of the consumer price index just drops to 1%, even though it probably will go lower? That means tomorrow the investment community will find out that that 1.4% return less 1% for inflation netted out a 0.4% gain above and beyond the interest rate. That means bonds are actually doing what they should do and look really smart during times of deflation. Now, isn't that interesting? So you kind of want to ask, well, why has that happened? Why all of a sudden where there's this major shift if you're right tomorrow? Well, let's think about this. Let's say that I need to buy some, or I want to buy some new equipment for my business. Maybe I manufacture stuff, who knows? And there's a piece of equipment I want that's $200,000 and I'm going to finance it over a 5-year period. Now, what am I going to hope for? Well, one, I obviously want to do enough business with this equipment to pay off that loan. But think about this. If interest rates on my loan are flat, right? So on a 5-year loan, let's say I can get 1%, but let's say consumer price index is rising to 2% a year. Now, are my monthly payments going to change over 5 years? No, they're not. They're not going to change at all. But inflation's going to go up, right? And yields are going to rise on new loans. That doesn't affect my loan, but if inflation is rising, what does that mean for the pricing power of my business? I can charge more. So I buy today, and then every year or every 6 months or whatever it is, depending on how much inflation is going up, I can raise my prices. And if I raise my prices, right, think about this, what's going to happen to the revenue of my business? It's going to be bullish. It's going to go up. And if my fixed expenses, such as that loan, don't go up, what does that imply for the profits of my business? They go up. That's bullish. Now, let's look at the reverse. What happens if consumer prices fall? Well, and I make that same loan on that same piece of equipment. Now, all of a sudden, what's happening to the prices of my business are going down. That's bearish, but my loan payments don't change. You say, well, why would you lower your prices? Because in a deflationary environment, there's less business. Let's just say only 5 million people don't go back to work. That means there's 5 million less people to consume. That's bad. But you say, well, you still don't have to lower your prices. My competition will. I might be forced into it. Maybe I do big contract work and I put bids in and they call me up and say, look, Steve, you're never going to win at these bids. Your competition's, you know, undercutting you. So I'm going to have to lower my prices. That's bearish. But my loan payments don't change. So what's going to happen to my revenue in the disinflationary environment? They're going to go down. What's going to happen to my profits in a disinflationary environment? Because of my loan payment, they're going to go down. And that's what the market is not pricing in. If you want to look at why stock prices are rising, because everyone thinks that the bottom is in, but they also think inflation is going to fix the problems. If we get a disinflationary, or I doubt an outright deflationary print in the consumer price index tomorrow, the market's wrong. So am I wrong? Well, when in doubt, go back to the data, because that tells you everything. So let's look. Here is the consumer price index against crude oil in blue. Well, this is a pretty good relationship. And what it suggests is that unless there's a new normal going on, and we can see where crude oil prices went down and consumer prices followed, well, the probabilities of me being right tomorrow look pretty good. We've already looked at the money supply and said, well, this big upshoot in the money supply has no bearing. In fact, arguably, we could say, based on the underlying data, that this suggests that consumer prices are going down too. And we can go forth and say, well, what about treasury yields? Well, I think treasury yields lead consumer prices. And look, treasury yields are headed lower too. And you can see consumer prices tend to kind of lag that. So it indicates, for the moment, that I got nothing to worry about tomorrow, unless things, you know, maybe the Fed's easing finally didn't work. Maybe it did. Yeah, some people say, well, but meat prices are going up. Yeah, there's going to be some things that are going up. That's a supply and demand imbalance. It's not specifically due to inflation. So hopefully tomorrow, I'll be right. Now, there's some other things that add into this. China and other countries have been exporting less. That means prices usually come down. We've seen their consumer price indexes going down. So if the countries exporting to us are exporting deflation, how the heck are we going to see inflation? Doesn't make a lot of sense. So pretty excited to see being right tomorrow. Now, does that start to make sense why the market would say, hey, let's let yields rise, because they're going to get as many people on the wrong side of this trade as possible? Does it start to make sense why we didn't see a reversal? Because the market's just letting people go with what they believe in. And tomorrow we all get to find out. Probabilities look pretty favorable that I'm right. And you can see that the positioning in terms of investor positioning is way off. So when we go to Hedgeopia and look at the commitment of traders reports of how speculators, hedge funds, are positions in the future market, we can see they increased their short positions on 10-year treasury bonds last week. Again, they're betting on inflation. And so we'll find out tomorrow. Are they wrong? Look at on the 30-year. They went back to nearly their longest position here recently, which is almost tied for their longest position in history. Again, betting on a massive move higher in interest rates. But is a massive move higher in interest rates evident in this chart here? No. In fact, they're already really short. This says that they've already spent all that they can spend. They're desperate for a big increase in the consumer price index. How about crude oil? The long's backed off a little bit, still very speculative long. This is not something that if I was in crude oil, I'd feel comfortable with being in this position. For some reason, people think that this problem is all going to go away, and I don't think so. Especially as it looks like we're going to lose the summer travel season. Hedge funds remain short the broad market in the S&P, even as it goes higher. They still believe that's going to roll over and head down. Why it would head down due to inflation, I'm not sure. Looking at gold, we see no real change in gold, although I do expect gold will head down. Not a popular view right now, but if real yields rise, it usually suggests gold is headed lower. And that means, of course, speculative positioning would be headed lower. NASDAQ, they're long the NASDAQ, but no real major change here as tech stocks head higher. They're still net short small caps as they're heading higher. No real change in the dollar, but it's worth noting from a dollar perspective, the Fed is not getting the dollar to ease despite all of the monetary intervention. And then from the position of the VIX, the volatility futures, they remain slightly net short. No major change here, even as a volatility falls off of its major peak. So very interesting stuff happening tomorrow. Again, I feel like I'm going to be pretty right, and I feel pretty excited about that. So let's get to your questions. Now, normally I don't put a question in front of the list, but this question had exactly to do with what we're talking about today. So he says, okay, Stephen, thanks for the video on gold and thoroughly confusing me. All right, well, you're welcome, I guess. Watching your videos is highly educating, and I hope today is one of those. You said that gold is inversely related to real yields. Yes, because real yields are rising. Tomorrow we get to find that out. Gold will likely fall. That is my opinion, not a wild popular opinion, but it is my opinion. But bond yields are likely going to fall. I agree with that. So do real yields refer to the difference between yield and inflation? Yes, they do. It is yield minus inflation. Are you saying that bond yields are falling at a slower pace than inflation? Yes, that's what I believe is going to happen. Therefore, real yields are rising. Correct. Will alcohol allow me to comprehend this better? Ha! Well, if you were drinking while you wrote this, then yes. If not, then probably not. So anyways, hopefully today's video clarified that. Next question. So you're saying that the Fed is actually buying them, bonds, from investment banks and putting them on their balance sheet. That is correct. And by doing it, it affects yields. Yes. How does the Fed buying stuff actually lead to lower yields, say on the 10 and 30 year? Because the Fed is buying bonds. So interest rates and bond prices. So when interest rates go down, bond prices go, I don't really have a bond one, but bond prices go up. So what would cause bond prices to go up. Someone who's coming to the market buying, say, $7 billion, and I think $6 billion or $7 billion of treasuries, I think somewhere around $5 or $6 billion in mortgage-backed securities, and they're not price sensitive. Now, they're not going to the bank and say, hey, you know, that price, you need to work on it. No, they're just like, here, bid on these. Okay, we'll take, you know, that price, the lowest one. So I'm not suggesting there's collusion among the commercial banks at all, but they're a price insensitive buyer. So the Fed buying bonds, taking them off the market, means those who do need bonds are likely to pay a higher price. And when that happens, yields go down. And that's why we've seen, the, you know, everyone thinks a quantitative easing is inflationary. I mean, that's the general view. Well, then why are we not getting any inflation in yields? Why have they been effectively flat? I mean, you could kind of average out the high and the low here. They've been effectively flat since March. Where's all this inflation from QE? I don't know, because I don't think it's there. Let's see. Next question. Thanks for this video. You're welcome. The one thing I felt I was missing in this video is a brief discussion of, oh, where or why other people would disagree with you. Well, they do. I mean, we're talking like 99.99% of the market disagrees with me. Would you be able to speak to that? Yes, I would. I think today it helped a little bit. Obviously, other non-stupid people hold a different opinion than you. Yes, they do. So is there some specific part of your underlying rationale where those people tend to disagree? Yeah, there's a couple of them. One is, I think they look at, say, oh, look at the M1 or the M2, and it's, oh my God, it's going up, and that has to be inflationary. It's like, you know, pop the hood on this thing. I mean, look. I mean, go back and look at recessions. Why did the M1 and M2 go up and inflation went down? You know, why did that happen in the last recession? People are too quick to just look at a chart and form an opinion because they think, oh, the rising money supply, that has to be inflationary. Well, no, it doesn't. It depends on where the money's going and what's being used for. Remember, inflation really comes from people borrowing money and spending it abroad. People piling up in savings accounts because they don't think they're going back to work, or a corporation who's losing money and has to shore up their balance sheet. That is not inflation. It might look like it on a chart, but in terms of how our monetary system works, it doesn't. Let's finish up the question. I'll make some more comments about it. What you said in your video makes a lot of sense to me, so I'm having a hard time understanding why everyone else wouldn't just agree with your process too. Thanks again. You know, that would be pretty cool, but that's not how markets work. I mean, you need people on both sides. I mean, if everybody was bullish simultaneously, then what good would it be to be bearish, and vice versa? You need someone to be on the other side of the market at all times. You know, what really changed things for me, and I say this as someone who has an undergrad business degree, and I could say this because I have it. I don't perceive that it's worth a whole lot beyond the paper it was printed on. Yes, I did take all the classes. Yes, I did, you know, get the degree. But I can say that because I have it. That's my opinion. And I know this because I did take at least one class in economics. Had to be, I knew for know for sure it was a microeconomic class. What I found is I saw these charts and people had their opinions, and you know, like when I showed you that money supply chart and I said, look, the money supply is going up and inflation is going down. And I, well, why are people have this opinion? It really wasn't until I started studying, you know, our monetary system and monetary policy and really started to understand how the system works, you know, where I really, you know, popped the hood and didn't just look at the plastic cover at the engine and go like, wow, that's a, you know, really impressive looking engine. No, let's take the cover off. Let's pull the engine out. Let's take it apart. Let's look at how this thing works. How does it connect to the transition? What does this do? What does that do? That I really started to understand that most people are wrong. And then, of course, the sub-question that is, why would these things exist, is because there are always people who are trying to make money on the fact that you don't know how the system works. I'll give you a great example. It wasn't more than a couple years ago, Jamie Dimon, the CEO of JP Morgan Chase, who I would say is a really smart dude and probably knows how the system works. Think that's fair to say? He was telling people the 10-year treasuries were headed to, say, 5 to 6%. And guess what that would have meant for 30-year yields? You're talking, you know, 6, 7, 8% 30-year yield. Now, what did we find out in the process of him making these claims? We found out two very important things. One, JP Morgan Chase was the largest buyer treasuries of all the commercial banks. Isn't that interesting? Number two, we found out they were also the largest seller a speculative short positions to hedge funds on the 30-year bond. So when interest rates collapsed, and there was a big short squeeze. And that wasn't long ago. I mean, in fact, that big short squeeze in the bond market happened right here, 30-year happened. I think it happened in here or it happened right in here, one of those two places. So it wasn't long ago that then it came out that JP Morgan was the one who was selling a lot of these positions. Yeah, well, maybe he wanted his bank to make some money profiting off of the stupidity of the hedge funds who didn't know what they were doing. So, yeah, what I find in this business is a lot of people have very shallow research and very deep opinions to back it up. So, yeah, I think I'm right. We'll find out tomorrow. So that's pretty exciting. Let's see how we're doing. I think let's just leave this here for tomorrow or for Wednesday. So obviously Wednesday, we'll talk about Steve being right or wrong. You can obviously get a feeling I'm not nervous, not upset. So I'm pretty excited to see that. I feel my research is validated. There's other things we could look at. I don't have data on the ECRI. I mean, that I saw on a Real Vision video today. There's just so much data that says, hey, I'm going to be right. So Wednesday, we'll talk about that. And I think Fed Chair Powell's doing something in between now and then, so it'll be interesting to see. Because if consumer prices head lower, then that means corporations, right? This is what I kind of missed about that real yields thing is starting this year and, you know, from January 1 over the next 5 years, there's a massive amount of corporate debt, a massive amount that's coming due and has to be refied. And a lot of it's coming out of the U.S. energy sector. So when real yields are negative, it means these companies can refinance that debt and hope to pay it off with inflated dollars. But when real yields are going up, real yields are going higher, that means their borrowing costs go up, that means their profits are headed down, and that's super bearish. And that's what the market does in pricing in recessions. It gets it wrong. Pretty cool, huh? I told you today it was going to be a great episode. Anyways, I really do appreciate you taking your time to watch. And I know many of you have said you're sharing it with your friends, family, coworkers. It means the world to me. We'll be back Wednesday to find out if I'm right or wrong. And in the meantime, you can look at how the market responds to the Consumer Price Index. It'll be released again 5:30 a.m. Pacific tomorrow. And until then, I'm Steve Van Meter. Thanks for watching. The content of this video is provided as education information only. It's not intended to provide investment or other advice. It shows not to be construed as recommendation or solicitation by selling security, financial product, instrument, or to participate in any particular trading strategy. This video was prepared by Steve Van Meter in personal capacity. Opinions expressed in this video that do not reflect the view of Atlas Financial Advisors, Inc. or Steve Van Meter Financial.